Mother Nature, Mother Nature, she's gonna get you. Yeah, she's gonna get you. Mother Nature, she's grown to hate you. She's gonna get you. Gonna get you, you betcha.
Welcome to the Progressive Radio Network. It's NBL on PRN.FM. This June 16th, 2015 edition of Nature Bats Last comes live from Burlington, Wisconsin, home of Chocolate City and the Nestle's Corporation. My hometown, where you can get a whiff of Nestle's daily to remind you of their loving ways. Our theme song is provided as a gift with our thanks by Afrozen, and you can find more of his work on SoundCloud.com. This week I'm flying solo as the good doctor finds himself in the Pacific Northwest, spreading the good news of abrupt climate change and near-term human extinction, but in other happier news, football season's only just around the corner. Today's show, we're going to hear from husband and wife Aaron Lehman and Sarah Leone. They are living lives most would envy, but most are too fearful to pursue. But first, let's look at some climate news briefly. In the summit in Bavaria, the G7 leading industrial nations agreed to phase out fossil fuels by the end of the century. Phase out by the end of the century. Does that mean it'll take another century to completely phase them out? This agreement is why I and many others have zero hope for those in power to do anything significant about the industrial model. Instead, they believe deeply in maintaining the only thing that matters, the status quo and the power that comes with it. And let's just say by some miracle, if you believe in such things, we do survive that long and we do phase out fossil fuels. Then what? Until we can see that it doesn't matter what energy source ultimately is the problem, but instead the dominant culture continuing to devour the planet. So if we have windmills or solar energy maintaining our way of life, and it still allows us to do what we're doing, I really don't see the point. In other news, in California, entitlement will be put to the test shortly. Enforcement of water use will hold heavy penalties for those who go over their quotas. Wealthy communities like Rancho Santa Fe use five times the amount of water as the state average. For some, because they pay high property taxes, they feel all water use is not created equal. In other words, if I pay more, well, then I should get to use more. I ran into this type of thinking several years ago when I gave a presentation critiquing the industrial model. I put up a slide that listed the entitlements of industrial civilization, and the list had a variety of things like electricity, strawberries in December, air conditioning, grocery stores, and municipal water coming out of the taps. A gentleman spoke up and said, "I didn't understand the definition of entitlement." After all, his version of entitlement probably resembles something like the welfare state, not realizing that the whole Ponzi scheme is one giant welfare state. In his thinking, he paid for a service, and therefore he should receive it. Like the folks in Rancho Santa Fe, the thinking is people-centered, more specifically, industrialized people-centered. This line of thinking goes something like this. This planet and all of its inhabitants are resources for our use. We create the game, and our game is the only game in town that matters. We feel we deserve these things. After all, according to our game, our narrative, we've earned them. We've paid for them. Other species, the biosphere, other people who live outside of the industrial model, don't play our game. They have no sense of entitlement and therefore are able to live within their means. We in the dominant industrial culture have not. And when things become ugly, like they presently are becoming, we begin to scratch and claw for what's left from a living arrangement that has no future. Cue the Nestle's Corporation, for example. Of course, we believe that we can begin phasing out fossil fuels by the end of the century as a possibility, so that tells you where our heads are at. We, of course, are the children of conquerors. Conquerors have wants, and their wants are their needs. We require more and more and that can never be fulfilled. We value monetary wealth over wealth of a healthy biosphere. David Suzuki recently wrote an excellent piece about this in the Vancouver Sun titled, "Aboriginal People, Not Environmentalists, Are Our Best Bet for Protecting the Planet." This, of course, requires listening, which conquerors are incapable of. This requires living within our means, which is the opposite of conquering. Conquering by today's standards as an individual is living off massive hierarchies of institutions and the systems they create. We conquer the lives of those we never have to see or hear from. We just flick a switch, or go to the store, or turn on the municipal tap. We are hidden from these hidden relationships. Entitlement has spoken. Well, today's interview is with one of my favorite people and his wife, Aaron Lehman, and I facilitated cultural diversity camps with Aaron a few years back, and he was one of the few individuals that I've come across who really blew my mind about the way he lived his life. He was very intentional and very conscious, and he had intent when he spoke, and he's one of the best listeners I've ever met. He recently found his equal in his wife, Sarah, and I asked each of them to write a bio, so they wrote one for one another. And here's what Aaron wrote about Sarah. Sarah Noelle Loyoni is one of the warmest souls I have met. Her commitment to kindness, wellness, and balance is off the charts. She teaches me daily how to love myself more and how to live with joy. Sarah loves creating music with her voice and ukulele. Jam sessions with family and friends is a deep passion. She is an essential oils business leader, teacher of yoga, rides her bicycle, and hula hoops like few I know. Simplicity and justice are her daily focus. And here's what Sarah wrote about Aaron. Aaron is a smiler, a connector, and everyone who meets him experiences a feeling of acceptance. 3 years ago, Aaron had an idea to go on a 7-month honeymoon around the world, where we could volunteer and play and experience all sorts of different cultures. This is one of the many dreams that has come true. Aaron is a dreamer, but also amazing at making things happen. He is always motivated by serving others and helping people experience love and vulnerability. He also loves to dance, sing karaoke, write, and takes amazing photographs of flowers. The best part of him is that he is 90% humor. Life is always fun with him, and he keeps me smiling and laughing daily. Welcome to Nature Bats Last in the Progressive Radio Network, Sarah and Aaron.
Thank you, Mike.
Hello.
How are you?
Hi. Good.
Hey, where are you?
We're actually in Montauk, New York. It's one of Sarah's favorite places to be. We did some workshops, essential oil workshops here on the East Coast, and decided to swoop through Montauk and with my parents and my sister and her boyfriend. So, yeah.
Yep, you got the whole crew.
Yeah, so we just got back from the ocean, took a dive, and yeah.
Little chilly, but.
Yeah, I'd imagine the Atlantic's a little chilly.
Yeah.
58.
So before we get to the deep stuff, I need to ask the pressing karaoke question, Aaron. and maybe Sarah could answer this, because sometimes when we're asked questions that, you know, confront us, we're not always, you know, unbiased, so to speak. But Aaron, is Aaron a serious karaoke singer, or is he the humorous type of karaoke singer where he knows his voice won't carry the day, but he has the personality to carry the day?
He's a really good singer, actually.
Okay.
And he introduced me to karaoke, and now we actually will watch karaoke YouTube videos and practice before we go, so we could try to be professional. But no, it's kind of a joke, but we have fun doing it.
So, Aaron, what is your karaoke go-to standard?
You know, I'm a big fan of Paul Simon's "You Can Call Me Al."
Nice, nice.
I like to go old school. Sometimes I like to mix in a little "Gangster's Paradise."
Oh,
by Coolio, just to keep people guessing.
Right, you're not messing around. I don't know if you know this about my wife, but my wife, when we do karaoke in the States, she is. Well, the people we hang out with, or used to hang out with when we teach, we're a bunch of karaoke divas. And my wife would always take a step back, and she would never really do it too often. But when we went to Europe, she was like the David Hasselhoff of European karaoke.
She was
a huge hit. Like, and it happened in Ireland, and then we went to Barcelona, and people came up to her afterwards and said they're huge fans of hers. I'm like, what is happening here?
That's awesome.
So good. So yeah. then she started singing a lot more after the Euro feedback.
Well, absolutely. Now she thinks, you know, she should have an entourage. And
what do you sing as well?
I do. My go-to song is "Papa Don't Preach" by Madonna.
Nice.
Classic.
And Karen's, the one that was big in Europe, was "Heartache Tonight" by the Eagles. So.
Okay.
Ooh, nice.
That's awesome. So good. Sarah is a, I think she's a Norah Jones.
Oh, yeah, well.
Sound alike.
Sarah can actually sing, so that's always good.
Exactly.
So I don't know many couples that I've only interviewed one other couple on this show, and those were the folks I lived with a few years ago, Ted, Maggie, Silk. Mm-hmm. And you're really one of the only other couples that I know personally, and I've never actually met Sarah, but I feel like I know her because, you know, I read your stuff all the time. And someday, you know, you guys will make your way out to the yurt and we'll get to know each other. But I don't know many couples that, from what I can see, have a consistent consciousness and intent with the way they live their lives. You don't seem to be just kind of going through the motions. And I was wondering, to kind of fill our audience in a little bit, if you could kind of take us through your journey as a couple and, you know, how you've kind of come to live this way as, you know, as partners.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I had always been just a good floater in life, mm-hmm. but it seemed hard for me to commit to something or see a plan all the way through. I was really good at coming up with goals and intentions. But the beautiful part about me meeting Aaron was that he's really great at completing goals and going through with everything. And I think on a daily basis, he helps me with affirmations and logistics, and also just a constant "you can do it" attitude, sort of a cheerleader attitude, which is awesome. And I feel like day by day with my consistent yoga practice, both of ours, and self-affirmations and motivations from Aaron, that all of those help me to live the life that I imagine.
Yeah, and I would say, you know, for me, from my end, is like we both had a really – well, we're both very hooked up with families who loved us deeply. And so I think when we did meet, we were pretty grounded in like – I mean, we've got parents. Both sets of parents are like passionate about living life to the fullest,
right,
and like really like embracing all that it has to offer. So, you know, and also we're both the youngest of our families. So we also have this like extreme, oh my gosh, this is like we gotta make each day incredible. If we don't, we're gonna go to sleep grumpy, and that's not cool. So, you know, like we just, I think when we met each other, it was like, whoa, did you just tell me? Like, I talked to her on the phone because she lived in New York and I was in Arizona, and she's like, yeah, I went hula hooping in the park today, and then danced to some music, and I was like, you're freaking 21 years old and you're dancing in a park and hula hooping by yourself. You know, like I probably stopped doing that at 9 because I started to get self-conscious. You know what I'm saying? Like, I was like, all right, no more hula hooping for me.
Yeah.
But right. So when I met her, I was like, oh my gosh, that's incredible. You know, like, just kind of, you know, releasing the care of, oh, who's going to see me? Oh my gosh. And so it's just been it's kind of been a nice blend for both of us, I think, with different gifts that she brings to the table and inspires me. Like, yeah, I mean, when she wakes up and drops into her yoga practice and I'm like, you know, 2 hours into my work session because I just like to freaking work all the time. You know what it's like, Mike, being
from, you're talking to the wrong guy about work.
From the Midwest, right? It's like, I feel like I should work 80 hours a week.
I never had that.
No, you didn't?
No, I never had that, Aaron. my wife's Midwestern, and she had that she still has that work ethic, but yeah, I think I must have missed that chromosome.
lucky man.
Yeah. It seems to me though that it's rare from, you know, from my experience of being out there on the road and traveling and meeting different people over the last 4 years, like Karen and I have. And, you know, just living in the first, you know, 18, 19 years of our marriage when we were what I would call living traditionally, where we went to work every day, I've met very few couples that are on the same page. And I mean completely on the same page as far as, you know, this is the way to be happy. And it seems to me, and again, you know, I haven't met Sarah in person and I haven't met you guys as a couple. I've hung out with Aaron, but it seems to be that you're on the same page and you know what makes you both happy, and you're following the same path, but you're still your own people. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like Aaron and I don't know if we read this somewhere or we heard it, but we like the idea that we're both two wholes. You know, when you meet somebody, a lot of people will say, oh, you found your other half. But I like to look at it as that, oh, I met another whole, you know, I met two whole people. And, and he just compliments me with, mm-hmm.
And I mean, I think that the happiness piece, it's like, again, I mean, just upbringings that really emphasize, like, live your dreams, live your passions. And I mean, it was hilarious when Sarah moved to Arizona. You know, I was like, all right, so maybe you should get a part-time job so we could, like, make sure we get some food on the table next month. And, you know, like, we were both just kind of freelancing. And she's like, I don't want to do something I don't like, Aaron. You know, like, and she was just adamant about. And so this happiness piece is like, I want to be able to put my energy into something that really fulfills me. You know, we both, you know, me when I was a high school educator, like, that was it. I mean, I was like, you know what? I've chosen this as my present reality. Like, I'm going to freaking live it up. And then Sarah, similarly, when she would go do a, you know, a freelance gig, you know, she too had this, like, you know, drop in and live it up. So I think we both have this. So in the work world, we both really want to feel passionate about what we're doing. Mm-hmm. And then in the play world, we do. We just, like, it's funny, Mike. We when we first met, she really wanted to swing dance, like partner dance all the time.
Right.
And I wanted to, like, hit the dance club. And so we ended up compromising on karaoke. That was like our halfway in the middle or whatever, you know. And now we're finally, like, starting to swing dance more, and we have a planned adventure to, like, go out and do the dance club with me. So I think we both are pretty intentional about, once doing our own thing, things that make us happy, but then also, like, cheering each other on and doing things together. Does that feel like we answered your question?
Oh, absolutely. You know, it's interesting because my feeling is you don't live a very traditional type of life. We can talk about that in a little bit. And from what you mentioned earlier, both of you, about the support systems you have from family and friends, because you don't lead what I would consider to be, you know, a status quo type of life, and you guys are out there a lot, and you're traveling, and you're doing different things, and you're living in a lot of what I would call or alternative groups, alternative communities, and things that are not necessarily mainstream. Have you gotten some? Well, I don't know if the word is resistance, but I know I've met people. Perfect strangers have come up to Karen and I, you know, in talking with them. And they're concerned about us. You know, they're concerned that I don't maybe have a full-time job. Or they're concerned that, you know, do I have insurance? And they're concerned if I have a savings. And they're concerned about my well-being. And, you know, and a lot of times these are folks who I've just met. Have you run into any of that?
That's awesome.
I don't really feel like we have, actually.
Mm-hmm. I think people are blown away by, like more just surprised that we could make a 7-month honeymoon happen.
Yeah.
I think they were just like, what the heck did you, how could you pull that off?
Right.
You know? And it was like, so I mean, there were some questions about how, you know, they're like, that must've cost a fortune. You know, most people, like, go on a week long honeymoon and spend, you know, drop $3,000 for a week, or $4,000. And it was like, we were spending, and we spent a lot less. No, you know, we spent more than that, obviously, for 7 months. But we found a way to keep our adventure, like, super cheap. And
yeah, but at the same time, I'm assuming, you know, because you've done some of the things we were doing, and you've actually come across some of the people that we've come across. We have mutual friends now and stuff like that. Yeah. We always get the response from people is, "I love what you do, but I could never do it."
Right.
Yeah.
And even in something as simple as you would think is traveling, you know, like couch surfing or volunteering or woofing or working at HelpX. People love the idea of it, it seems to me. But when push comes to shove, they don't want to – I don't know if they don't want to push themselves out there or they think they're going to be uncomfortable or what. Have you experienced any of that?
Yeah, I think, we have heard that phrase a lot. And I think it's, being afraid to push out of their comfort zones. even for us to go on a trip like that, it was, for me, it was definitely pushing me constantly, out of my comfort zone.
I mean, I think there were, I think just the experience of, like, a lot of people, my mom, even, she said when I first went to India back in the day in 2003, she was like, oh, I could never do what you did. I'm like, you could, you might not choose to, but you totally could. It's like, and it could be an amazing experience if you chose to do it. So I think that, I mean, that our adventures kind of have inspired us, like when people are, they want to taste it, they want to adventure. I mean, it's helping people realize that, like, it's totally doable and totally worth it. There's lots of freaking projects out there that need help and, that are doing amazing things, more sustainable things. And it's an amazing opportunity.
Well, you wrote a post the other day, Aaron, about, and you really gave people suggestions of what to do. And that's what I love is, I mean, are you finding that you're getting some positive feedback from maybe your former students or friends or colleagues of people, maybe they're not going on a 7-month honeymoon, but they're doing things that they might not have done if they're not, seeing that, there's some people out here, quote unquote, that they think are taking risks when in actuality it's not really a risk. It's really just stepping outside of your comfort zone, and a step beyond a little bit. Have you felt people that you're inspiring people a little bit?
Yeah, it's been fun. It's been really fun. Like, I sat for coffee with a former student of mine a few weeks ago, and she went through, and I honestly don't know. It's not like she said, "Oh, you and your wife's trip totally pumped me up and I went and did this," but she came back, like, she had literally been couch surfing and just organic farm, woofing it and whatnot, and it was like, oh my gosh, this is so cool. And then, we would get emails from people who would say, oh, you guys are inspiring me so much. My husband and I, we're gonna rent a camper, here pretty soon, and we're just gonna go live our dreams and explore the world and meet people, I don't know. I feel like that's definitely been a highlight.
Yeah. And I think even with our families too, it's, even though they wouldn't necessarily do the trip that we would do, they still have made a lot of small changes since we've gotten back, that have been, I feel like, really awesome and opening. Like, Aaron's family is now traveling everywhere since we got back. They just want to go to every single place. That's
They're awesome. Never home.
Yeah, and we were never home. And it was funny, at the end of our honeymoon, I'm like, Aaron, I think I'm good to just, like, settle in for a bit. And
relax.
And, like, the whole family was excited to travel, and we haven't stopped again. So it's good. But
seriously, my family got wild. And then, I mean, even your parents have just sold a property and then, like, are now going to rent a smaller, cheaper space so that they have more financial flexibility to, like, do things that they actually want to do.
Yep.
Anyway.
Yeah, I mean, it's cool. My parents just bought a teardrop camper, and I think Karen and I are seeing some of the same things that, I think what I mentioned earlier, I think people have this impression, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, I'm not trying to speak for you, but at least on our end, that people think what we've done on some levels is take this huge risk. And we really haven't, because, it's not like I'm going, I'm so privileged. I'm not going to starve. I'm not going to be homeless. I have plenty of family and friends and loved ones that would, pick us up if anything would ever happen, tragic or anything like that. And all we've really done is kind of leave some of the things that people think they need constantly behind. And I tell people, I can always go back to those things. Right. If I need to get a full-time job, I can get a full-time job. I don't necessarily, need to teach. I can do something. And I think once you tell folks that and they realize that, there's really there's really a huge safety net under us living in this country and, you know, living the way we live, then, you know, they're a little more apt to take some chances out there. That's kind of what I've experienced.
Yeah. Well, tell me, I mean, I think even going on the adventures you guys have, that we have, like, the confidence level, I feel like confidence level just in, like, the ability to find a job, you know, like, a lot of people are like, oh my gosh, if I lost this job, then I'm not
right,
going
right.
to, but the fact that we, you know, when you go and, like, roll into a campground, meet two people, and say, hey, do you know someone who might let us camp in their backyard? And they, like, the next thing you know, you're camping in their friend's backyard. You start to just trust, like, oh, my, we, you know, if we need to get,
right,
you know, those, you know, drop back into a full-time job, we could make it happen.
I think just putting yourself out there, which the two of you have obviously done, and, you know, the idea that you can go literally thousands of places around the globe and work for room and board is mind-blowing to me.
Seriously.
And you can do it, you know, on a really cheap budget. And, you know, I saw how you guys did it and how we did it, and there's even ways even cheaper to do that. I mean, I didn't hitchhike or anything like that. I could easily have done that or walked a hell of a lot further than I did. But it's, you know, it's out there, and I tell folks that, you know, it's, you don't necessarily have to have an employer, and you will, you know, the folks you'll meet, it's more about the people you'll meet than the places you go. And I think, from what I've read and seen from two of you, that's been the case.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about that a little. What are you seeing out there? I mean, you were on the road for 7 months. It seems like you've been on the road a lot since you've got back. What are you seeing out there as far as, you know, because you're both, to me, seem very positive, optimistic people. There's a lot of things happening in the world. You know, it's a very interesting time to live, so to speak. And you know, what are some of the things that you've seen, witnessed, and that stand out for you?
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think, you know, what jumps out to me when I hear that question is just the fact that I feel like a lot of us, all ages, but I obviously, like, a lot of the travelers that we would meet just have this, I'm not going to do something I don't like for 40 years.
Right.
It's just not going to be part of my journey. And, like, that's freaking off the, you know, that's just inspiring.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
You know, you'd meet somebody and they're like, yeah, I'm going to go pick berries and, you know, in Australia and, like, make a little money to pay for my next 4 months of traveling.
Yeah.
And you're like, because they just want to, like, and not that they dreamt about picking berries for the rest of their life, you know, but it's more of this, like, what I really want to do is explore cultures, meet beautiful people, learn from others, you know, so they're going to, you know, work for a couple months to make a little bit of money. And, anyway, so I just think that there's this, I'm not going to suffer for 40 years. I really want to thrive for as long as I have left on this earth. How, you know, whether I'm anyway, you know what I mean? So it's like, I think that
you're being very present.
Exactly. Desire to thrive daily instead of like, oh, you know, when I'm, you know, I'm in my 12th year of teaching and I just have to tough it out the next 16 years.
Yes.
You know, and you're like, wait, hold up a second. Don't freaking do that. Like, I mean, if you want to do that, go do that. Like, and freaking love it. But if you don't want to do that, you don't have to do that.
Yeah, and I feel that when I go back to institutions sometimes and I see some of my old colleagues, you know, I was one of the guys that I knew right away I wasn't a lifer. I would walk into the building and we had these portraits of the senior class in our administrative building every year. And I said to myself, as soon as these senior portraits get long enough where they get on this side of the hallway, I'm out of here. And I got out of there right before they switched over because I would watch this one guy. He was in every portrait and he was, you know, because he taught seniors and his mustache would just, you know, it would get grayer and thinner and his hair would get thinner and he'd get a little heavier. And I was like, I cannot be that guy. I just cannot do this. You know, and part of that's fighting fighting the fear. And I know, Sarah, you talked a little bit earlier about, you know, there were some things that, you know, you had to probably push yourself outside of your comfort zone a little bit. And I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about that for yourself being out there and, you know. being out on the road, so to speak.
Yeah, I think, when we were traveling, right before we left, we had just gotten married, and I had lived in Arizona for what, Aaron?
4 years.
4 years, and I had really just developed a community there that I absolutely loved. Yeah, so when we were ready to go off, I, had this beautiful, warm community, and I felt just loved and held. And then when we left, I felt like, oh my gosh, I don't have any of that anymore. And it was sort of like this needing to let go. Like I was present when I was traveling, but there was also a part of me that was longing for what I had.
Sure.
And that probably went away in maybe month like 2.5, 3. And I just, it's like I had to accept where I was, which sounds ridiculous because we were like on this amazing honeymoon around the world. But, there's still our minds still follow us wherever we go. So that emotional journey doesn't end, whether we're across the world or at home.
No, it doesn't. I tell people still there are days where I wake up laying there and I still think on some levels, what am I doing? Because it's so ingrained in me and so ingrained in this culture that, as Aaron mentioned, I should be pursuing that 40 years of income so I can have a giant pension at the end and I can, retire and enjoy golf or whatever I'm supposed to do at that point. And I lay there once in a while, and not as much as I used to, because my wife, Karen, has really, she's really a calming influence, and she's, she knows everything's going to be okay, and I do too, but, I still have those moments where I wake up and go, gee, what the heck am I doing? And so, I agree with you. I don't think it doesn't necessarily just go away because you want it to go away. Mm-hmm. And it helps me reading and hearing and seeing what you guys are doing, because I know there's other people out there pursuing things that are similar in doing things that I think are inspiring. So I, that's why I have you on the show, and that's why I love reading what you guys are doing. So,
yeah, it's good. It's good to, so good to be able to chat with you and get to, just be on the path. 'Cause it's like you just said, it can feel, when I'm walking down, even when I was in, in the high school, 'cause I mean, the daily mental choice to say, I can either walk with gratitude and seek to learn and seek to educate and seek to grow, or it can be grumpy and ignorant and not have any interest in anybody else. And it's like, it on paper, everybody would be like, of course I'm going to freaking choose that. The good days, but it's so easy to not choose the good days. And we get, I always think about how, our radio stations, the typical radio stations in cities, it's like, you get to Wednesday and you get to the hump day and literally are like just trained from such a young age. Like the weekends is when you get to enjoy life and just trust that that's just going to be how it is. I was talking to our 9-year-old and 11-year-old niece. Mm-hmm. They freaking still like school.
Yeah. And
they don't want to go on summer vacation. Like they actually love their classmates, and we were trying we were like trying to figure out when it shifts, when the media training of are really life supposed to suck. You're going to have to tough it out 40 hours a week,
Right. Yeah. Yeah. When are we taught that? It's interesting you bring that up, because I was thinking back to my child. I used to have to walk to school, the old story, the old guy had to walk to school, 40 miles uphill both ways. But I really did walk to school. It wasn't that far. It was like a mile, but I had to go past the high school to get to the grade school. Mm-hmm. And I remember going past, this is in the 1970s, and when they started to do busing in the major cities in the U.S., they started to bus students so we would desegregate the schools. Mm-hmm. And so we, in third grade, I went to a predominantly white school. In fourth grade, it was desegregated. So probably 30% of our population was African-American a year later. And we didn't really have any issues at the grade school level, but I had to walk past the high school to get to the grade school, and there were, for the first 2 months of school, they had the police escort the buses in. And reflecting back on that was, when does that happen? When were these kids at the high school level taught to hate because these third, fourth, and fifth, and sixth graders down literally a quarter mile down the street are playing kickball? And I think it's similar to what you're talking about. There's a moment, and I don't know exactly when it is, that this indoctrination seems to flick a switch on not everybody, but you know, a vast majority of people. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's interesting.
That's a story. Holy moly!
So let's talk about a little bit about this yoga thing. I've tried yoga. And I've tried it for various reasons to improve my flexibility. I'm a distance runner, so I have no flexibility. And I've tried it to be more present. And both of those, I have apparently I'm doing it wrong. So, Sarah, talk to me about yoga, how you got into it, what it does for you, and maybe what I could try.
Yeah, I got into yoga because when I was in college, I took a ballet class. I was a performing arts major, and the first half of my ballet class happened to be yoga. She was a yoga teacher, too, and it was my favorite part of the entire day.
Okay.
And so that was really my first introduction when I was about 19, and then... And I knew it was funny. In 19, I remember saying to myself, "That's what I'm going to be a yoga teacher." But it wasn't until 6 or 7 years later that I decided to actually do it. But yeah, what does it do for me? I just feel like it helps me. It helps me process. It helps me process all of my thoughts that are going on and kind of work through that. It helps me to just ground out and figure out what is truth and what are all of these lies that I'm making up in my head.
Right.
And just, yeah, I'm an analyzer. I analyze a lot of situations and things and am a natural introvert. So when I'm in my yoga time, it helps me to just, yeah, sort through what's truth and what's not. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm too. I'm too busy trying to get through the position I'm in, and I feel like I'm suffering. And I know I should embrace the suffering as a present moment, but I'm like, holy cow! Is there a particular style of yoga you're doing? Because are you doing Bikram? Are you doing?
I do all sorts of yoga, but I do Ashtanga yoga, which is a set sequence, kind of like Bikram yoga, and you're breathing while you're moving throughout the poses. But I kind of look at the poses as a facade. Like, that's not really what it's about. It's to me, yoga really could be anything. Like, it's not really about the poses or what you're doing there. You could do yoga when you're running, you know, if you're breathing and you're moving.
And that's I guess what I'm trying to get at is you mentioned that it helps you process. And that's really what I do when I'm running. And I'm really starting to focus on breath. One, to keep me present. And two, I think it really, it just feels healthier than going out there and pounding, you know, whatever the distance I'm going to run that day, which sounds similar to the poses. The poses are kind of the pounding and the what you have to go through. And that's maybe in that case, when I'm doing yoga, I'm missing the journey, so to speak, because I'm so focused on, you know, am I doing this move right? And it's killing me.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting you say that because a lot of times I can tell just how I'm feeling, like my current feeling of how I'm feeling in life when I'm in my yoga practice, because if I have a thought like, I just want to get to the last pose. That's how usually the rest of my life is going. It's like, I just want to get to the next step. So a lot of times I'll think about that when I'm in my yoga practices, like, oh, this move is super hard. I don't want to do it. I'll just skip it. It's like I notice the pattern in the rest of my life too. So it helps me to just be aware of everything else throughout the rest of my day.
Right. And that seems to be at least pretty common in our culture, you know, because we're so future-based. We're so, getting to the end, or as Aaron brought up, you know, getting to the weekend and living our lives out there. Do you feel that the way you guys are living now, that you are more present than you were? Because, Aaron, you were a pretty present guy when I met you, at, you know, doing camps, you know, 8-9 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that, I do feel like I continue to do my best daily. Mm-hmm. I definitely some days, some mornings, I could spend more time future focused. I don't spend a whole lot of I don't spend a whole lot of time in the past, but I do when I'm hanging out with people and we just want to reflect and be vulnerable together and learn from each other, you know, but as far as spending a whole lot of time stressing about the past, that doesn't happen a whole lot anymore. Occasionally, you know, a past thing, pops up, but it's typically present. And then, you know, the future dreams and goals, there's definitely some desires of, that I have, that it's like, oh gosh, I'm ready to start that project already. Or, when next May we're going to be able to do that project, Sarah, and it's going to be so exciting, or, you know, I can't wait to do this, or so. But
those seem pretty pretty healthy future ideas and thoughts, though. I mean,
correct.
Unlike, oh, true. My God, when's Saturday or Friday going to get here? You know, because I'm, you know, I'm hating this job or whatever it happens to be.
True. Yeah.
So Aaron, do you do something in particular to keep yourself grounded? I know, because Sarah obviously practices yoga. Is there something you do, or?
Yeah. You know what? I have to throw out for you, because just with the distance running background myself also, I also, with yoga, you know, when I would go on like a 6-mile, even just a 6-mile run back in the day, I was like, if I hadn't run in a while, mm-hmm. that first mile was always like, dang, this does not feel nice. You know, it was just like, what?
Wait till you get to my age.
And so, but it made me, like, it made me click, like, why a lot of people don't run. They don't do distance because, like, that first mile, holy moly, like, working yourself up to being able to even just jog a mile is a journey. So I feel like yoga could, you know, if you saw this more as, like, hey, that first mile, you know, the first. And I personally wouldn't start with an Ashtanga. I would start with like a more gentle flow yoga, like a yin yoga or restorative yoga, just more like relaxed yoga.
Yeah, and maybe that's what I'm doing, is I'm just, you know, I'm just jumping into something that's, you know, way over my head, and, you know, I'm trying this stuff, and I'm like getting frustrated because at the end of it, I'm just, you know, disappointed or hurt or injured or out of, you know, it's killed me, and I'm like, that wasn't enjoyable.
Right. Tour for 6 days, and you're like,
maybe I shouldn't do P90X yoga.
Yeah, don't do that. Don't do that. Don't start there.
Oh, right on. So, to send you, as a couple, what are you guys working on personally? I mean, you have goals. Obviously, you talked about goals a little bit. Are you looking for community? Or are you looking for, you know, a place to live? What's on the future for both of you? What are you looking at?
We're moving to Northern San Diego in September.
Okay. Congratulations. That's a great place.
Yeah. So we're going to live there for this next year and kind of figure out where our community is going to be. We're going to buy a property where we can have a community on and gardens and that sort of thing. We just need to figure out where that's going to be. So Northern San Diego will be our transition place, but it'll be nice. We'll be near the ocean, and yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, to add to that, I think it's been fascinating how, like, it's just kind of constantly been in this shifting reality. Like, who knows what's going to eventually manifest, what we're going to eventually create, you know? But, like, you know, because a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, we would have drawn a picture for somebody, and they would be like, oh, that's on point. And then, like, right now, it's not identical to what it was a year and a half ago.
Yeah.
So we're definitely it's definitely a journey. We're, you know, in the process of slowly building, you know, sharing, educating other people about essential oils. And so that's like our, you know, our fundraiser more or less, you know, for our future dreams. And just like, in addition to like just feeling positive about helping people with their health, this is like long-term wise, we're thinking, wow, we could really have some, create a really cool space given the people that we know and are connected to. We had gotten pretty excited about, when we went in January, we started looking at some properties like in, you know, 40 minutes from the coast and like Fallbrook and Bonsall, California. And they're just kind of like hippie areas.
Yeah.
But we sat with like a realtor and she kind of was like, "Woo, you're going to have to jump through some serious hoops to get like, you know, to get this code,
yeah,
you know,
to build
the Adobe, like good luck."
Right. Yeah.
Gave us a little bit of a
reality check.
A reality check. Yeah. Exactly. It was like, son of a gun.
Well, yeah,
go ahead.
I was just going to say, I think our thing right now is when we were looking in California, we were finding a lot of properties that we thought we wanted, you know, an avocado property, like some sort of agriculture. And then we realized the whole water situation in California and really, that, you know, how much water avocado trees take up. So that was, you know, a complete shift for us too, is figuring out, okay, and where is it going to be with the water situation in California and all of that. So
yeah, it's California. Well, and I mean the entire Southwest, and it's a pretty frightening scenario at the moment. We'll see what happens. You know, nobody knows exactly. I know it won't be business as usual for folks that are, you know, used to just using water, you know, whenever they choose to. Speaking of code, where Karen and I live, that's the reason we live where we live, because the code system in Southwest New Mexico and or not in New Mexico in general is pretty loose. There are building inspectors, but there are so few of them, and the general rule, as I understand in New Mexico, is that if you can get some sort of structure up, you know, just a framework, and you occupy it, you're in it.
Wow. Huh. Yeah.
So if you can do that before a building inspector shows up, you know, you got it.
Wow.
So if the road that Karen and I live on, I bet there's maybe 3 to 4 houses that are code. And there's probably, you know, 60, 70 houses down that road.
Wow.
Nobody lives on code. And what's amazing is, once you get outside of the code system, the creativity is just unbelievable. Mm. You know, because we live near people that live in Adobe, they live in Straw Bale, they live in Papercrete, they live in one guy that I know built his entire house out of things that he salvaged from the local dump. So it's there's just this creativity, and with that creativity, there's so much learning. And so really the reason we live there is not so much where it is, but the people there have just been doing this for so long and so well that we can literally spend the rest of our lives learning from them. And it's such an enjoyable thing to do when you build your own house out of, you know, whatever it happens to be. And it's something that, you know, you created with your hands and it's unique to you. And so that's why I encourage people, if anything, just to come out to where we live, not necessarily to stay in the yurt and stuff like that, but really to experience the people and what they've done and what they've been doing really since the 1970s out there. So if you can find a community like that, and they're out there, because we visited places in Missouri. I know there's places in North Carolina, separate counties that don't have a code system. And if you can find those places, the creativity and the people that, migrate to those areas are amazing, amazing folks to learn from.
Mm-hmm.
So that is my slice of advice.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we'll have to talk more about that another time, but it's so intriguing to me because San Diego County, it's like they offer incentives for like gray water systems, and they offer incentives for straw bale, and, you know, but what the heck's that mean? You know, like the realtor just stressed us out. We could have looked a little deeper, I think.
Yeah, it's tough because, you know, I feel that the world is become full of a bureaucratic mess, and the few spaces that are left are very few. And we were very fortunate to just come across this place via, you know, a friend of ours who happened to come across it and then move there. But the more I've explored, and a good place to look for people, I always tell them to look on the there's an Intentionals Community Network, and I don't know if you've looked on there at all.
I see, yeah.
But if you go on and you just Google Intentional Communities, there's a network. And those are the places you can tell by state where these counties are, where they're either very lax on their building codes or they don't have any at all. Mm. And, you know, there's, like I mentioned, there's some states that are a little more lenient than others, and definitely some counties. So I would at least encourage people to look at those places, and not only because of the building codes, but because of the people they attract that go to those places, because they're folks like you. They want to do something different.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of what I look for in community, because it's a type of freedom, and you know, and that's really, it seems to me, what you guys are pursuing. It's really about liberation, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
For sure. I think, you know, externally and internally, both, you know, it's like, how do we I honestly continue to, I think it'll be it's part of my life journey to just, I continue to wrestle with this. I mean, you know, peace being like ultimately what I feel like I'm here for, like to be, you know, a peace person, share peace, work for peace, support people who are working for peace, you know, like, and so it's just this challenge, I think, on the journey to know, gosh, I mean, I've got some like, you know, who did I study growing up? I was raised in a Jesus world, so I studied a dude that freaking like gave it all up,
right,
and to like just help people. And so, you know, I just am continue. You know, then you read about Gandhi, and then you all these people. I just continue to be amazed at like, just some of the mentors that I've kind of looked up to throughout my life just went off the charts. You know, they would be living in Southwest New Mexico. You know, in my opinion, you know, like,
watch out for those false prophets.
Exactly. So I'm like, I continue to wrestle, you know, just like, okay.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you, Aaron, and Sarah, you know, because you're both very upbeat but you take on, and it seems to, you know, you're not shy of looking at the world for, you know, in some cases for what it is and what it isn't. What are some of the things that you are passionate about and that, you know, you see, you know, social justice-wise or environmental justice-wise? What are some of the things you follow and that really kind of grabs you?
Mm-hmm. I mean, you want to start?
Yeah, I think for me, it's this, what grabs me is helping people live in a joyful state. Not necessarily, and like, we're also working on the emotional mental journey as well.
Yeah.
To get to that joyful state. Yeah, for me, I've come from a past where I've had to work on a lot of different issues by talking about them and working through them and letting out those blockages that I've held in for so long. And so, but being able to let those out and talk about those has freed me up so much to be such a joyful person and to do these like crazy, amazing dreams. And so my passion is to help people do the same thing, is to break free of their shadows and the things that they've been holding on to for a long time.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. So more of some, I mean, I feel like I think that's where we've kind of come together super well, is this like the, I don't know, justice in a, you know, because just the internal justice, like just internal work, mental, emotional stuff, like that just literally has many people in the clutches of like being zombies on the life journey.
Yeah.
And so like how to like help people release, you know, we did, you know, when we did the work, the diversity camps, Mike, you and I and Lance and the group, you know, it was like, that was about helping people free themselves from generational patterns that don't serve them any longer, you know, and to free all of us, you know. So it's like, I feel like that's, as far as, you know, justice goes, I feel, I mean, there's some specific things that I could be like, you know, project wise, like when I think about how I would, you know, the other day I posted something about when I have $1 million, you know, here's what I, you know, I'm excited to do with it or something like that. So I, you know, I think that for me, it's like, gosh, I want to kids who haven't left Phoenix, Arizona, or, and who want to, I want to help them.
Yeah.
Have an opportunity to leave Phoenix, Arizona, and to go live even a dream for a month, you know, like if it's supporting them financially to go to Guatemala and do volunteer work. It was so crazy. Sorry, sidelight story. I did a workshop with in one of my former students' science classrooms. It was like an AP Chem class at the end of the semester.
Okay.
And he's he actually, I think he went to Cougar Town back in the day. But anyway, he is a teacher. So I did a little workshop, and we talked about dreams, and all these kids talked about families, you know, wanting to go. They were all from Tolleson High School, which, you know that area.
Yeah.
You know, anyway, Hispanic background families, and like they were like, I want to go to Mexico and do programs down there. Like when they talked about, I was like, you know, what world issue or what dream do you want to live? You know, and they were like, I want to help people in Mexico, like, not struggle so much. I want to go to Guatemala and, you know, where my family's at, and help, you know, teach kids there. So I don't know. Anyway, I continue to just want to provide opportunities for people to, like, live their dreams and release some of that mind, heart, emotional, spiritual stuff, leave a lot of that crap to the side and start to really embrace who they are. And anyway,
it seems to me that, you know, it's really letting go of the fear of the unknown, you know, like, you know, you have to put yourself out there. And part of that is letting go of our indoctrination, our domestication, you know, the things that we're supposed to do. And you guys do that well. Well,
thank you.
That's about all the time we have. I need to get you guys out to the yurt.
Yeah, we'd love to.
So this fall, let's plan for that. And then, you know, maybe down the road, we'll catch up with you here on the show.
Sounds good.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks
this
so much
awesome.
For having us, Mike.
Absolutely. All right. Talk to you guys later.
Okay, all right. Take care. Bye-bye.
All right. Well, folks, that about does it for this week on the Nature Bats Last Show. Thanks again to Sarah and Aaron for their wisdom this week. And make sure to like our Facebook page, Nature Bats Last on the Progressive Radio Network, and join our Facebook group as well as Nature Bats Last on PRN.fm, and feel free to post some questions. Continue to follow Guy's blog at GuyMcPherson.com for further updates, essays, and speaking tours. And remember to support Afrozen and his work at SoundCloud.com. Until next time, remember, the dominant culture has been very clever, but in the end, Nature Bats Last. Mother Nature.